This is the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy from Connecticut, Clinton Bonner, filling in for Adam Emmer. How you doing?
Honored. That's the word. Honored. It's, these are big Sideshow Bob shoes to fill here, man. I'm probably not going to curse as much. I might not rant as much. And I love me some Adam. So that's the word. Honored.
We'll get this out of the way real quick. Adam is working. Just what kept him away from going to the Houston game this last weekend with work. He hasn't even had, I talked to him on Thursday. He still has not had a chance to watch the game. And so I figured, you know what? He probably doesn't have time to do a show. So I know I'm going to go to a guy that did watch the game against Houston and call up my buddy Clinton.
Yeah, it's very nice. We get to talk a little cards, talk a little Pokemon, and talk Seahawks for, like, you know, the 13th time this week. So I'm game. This is, hey, more Seahawks I can talk in my life, the merrier I become, and tis the season.
It is a different format among all of the other formats that we do, and there are things to talk about with this Houston game. I know I want to talk about my experience down in Houston because it was a great time. And there's just a lot to talk about with this game in that it was a good game. They get a dominant win with that 33-13 victory over the Houston Texans. Now, as close as the final score was, it was a little bit closer through the first three quarters. How was it for you, Clinton? For the first three quarters, were you on the edge of your seat feeling like, oh, they're going to find a way to screw this up and the Texans are going to be in it and then our season's going to be over and we aren't even going to have to worry about this game against the Rams? Or did it feel dominant enough to you that it was just a matter of time before they pull away?
So I had a very opposite experience, and I was not able to watch the game live.
Oh, that's right.
Either.
We had this discussion already.
But that's all right. It's recapping for the folks that didn't hear that part of it or haven't heard it yet. Like, I wasn't able to watch it live. So I was watching, like, you know, like a Bleacher Report feed or whatever. Right. And watching the rhetoric on Twitter, it seemed like it was going to be a really sluggish game. But then when I watched it, I didn't see that. I saw a couple of missed opportunities, missed pass here, a Sidney Jones penalty that really wasn't things like that, right? A holding call that really wasn't on a DK touchdown. But I thought the offense was, frankly, how it should look against a worse team in Houston. But it looked good, man. Like, we had the action, we had the motion, we used the middle of the field, which I've just been pounding the drum on. So that's how it looked for me. Now, again, after the first drive, right, the Texans go right down and do what they do while you, I mean, again, how that must have been like a crappy feeling.
Oh,
watching
my
that
gosh.
First drive.
Well, the thing was, is that there were so few Texans fans in the stands. It was almost as if, like, the people sitting next to us, they were super nice. A couple of ladies, and I think one of them had brought their son. And after that first touchdown, it was almost like they looked at us and kind of felt sorry for us. Like, oh, I know that all of you are here and we're in the minority. But there was like some kind of weird confidence that they had after that first touchdown. And it's like, you know, this may not go this way for you all day, but go ahead and have your, you know, feel that way about this game for now. But I had the sense that was just because what we know about our team is that they do this kind of thing. They give up easy drives to start the game before they finally lock it in. And so I guess I wasn't too concerned about the way that it started, other than, I mean, I didn't want it to start that way. It was just like, okay, here's our Seahawks team that always seems to do things like this. And now they've given themselves a hole to climb out of.
And this is it's a bit perpetual in the sense that besides the best years of our defense, right? So like just the 2013, 2014, besides those years, this has kind of happened for a while now. It's just, we do this a lot. And even 2013, the NFC Championship game, we were down about 10-0 in the blink of an eye, right?
So yeah, like, because Russell fumbles it within the 5-yard line. And thankfully the Legion of Boom defense holds him to a field goal after that, you know, disaster of a start.
So we've seen this movie before is what it boils down to. And as you said, things got better. Things got cooking. And obviously there were some major forces at play, some major players that really stole the show that just, you know, that were just were frankly the best dudes on the field. And obviously, well, one thing that I would love to understand from your point of view at the game. Well, first of all, what was your actual vantage point? We didn't talk about that. Like, yes. Where were you sitting? What did it look like for you?
We were seven rows behind the Seahawks bench on the 50-yard line.
Wow, I didn't know that. Holy cow.
So tickets you would never be able to get in Seattle for the price that we paid. Like these cost less than probably my normal 300-level seats. And I actually did get them on Saturday. I didn't wait until the very last minute, although I did take a peek at the very last moment just to see if I did okay. And I did okay getting them on Saturday.
There you go. I just want to applaud you man to man that, hey, what are you? You're 42, right? You're 42 years old, right? You get on a plane, you go to travel to the Seahawks. If you're going to be a bear, be a grizzly. And that's how you be a grizzly. Well done.
Yes. So we could yell at the players throughout the game, which, you know, a lot of the Seahawks fans did during the breaks. It made for a good time. And so, yes, that was my vantage point. I was wearing my Tyler Lockett jersey, and this was a Tyler Lockett game, Clinton, right from the jump.
Four-man rush by Houston. Russ looks. Now he's going to scamper out of the pocket, goes to the right side. He's going to look and throw down the far side. Reaching up, making the catch is Lockett over the top of the defender. Tyler Lockett, one of the shortest guys on the field, becomes the tallest receiver for the Seahawks on that play. Reaches up over the DB, makes the catch. Big gain as he came out of the right side and just took off down the sideline and caught the pass for a 28-yard gain over Terrence Mitchell.
Steve Rabel, Cairo Radio, and yes, Tyler and his ability, well, one, for Russ to fit it in those tiny windows along the sideline, it always seemed to be to Tyler, and Tyler was making these crazy toe-tap catches just throughout the day.
It was like the pirouette at the last second catches. And the window is that this was the thing too. We talked about this on 3 and 3 out leading up to the game was, will, you know, Russ was clearly progressively getting things back. You know, it was like, okay, he got the short game back. He got the intermediate game back. And the Mama Cleo prediction was he's going to hook up. There's going to be the 50-yard plus bomb.
We'll 45 get there.
Yeah, that I know. But these types of plays, they reminded me, ever go watch like, you know, the Russ, whatever they are, that they're down in Hawaii or the Pro Bowl, like challenge stuff, you know, when they got to drop back.
He's throwing through the tires.
And he absolutely destroys every other human being on the planet at this particular game, right? And then you see him do this, like, and he's done this for a while now, but to be reminded of how precise he can be when he's on, I mean, holy Hannah. There was like 3 to 4 of those, and most of them were to Tyler, where it was like, holy hot damn, like that is precision. So you know the man is back, which, hey, we got more games to go win.
We do. And he could start this weekend by winning one against the Rams. And man, if that could happen, stupid Rams.
Yes.
But as maybe expected, because you did have that Mama Cleo prediction of going ahead. I don't know if we necessarily could have predicted the Rashad Penny breakout game.
Two tight ends on the right side, and that's the side Penny goes to, breaks free. Stiff arms a man down to the 20. He's going to go 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Seahawks. Rashad Penny, 32 yards and a big stiff arm, and he sticks it in the end zone. There are a lot of 12s who are loving it in the sunshine in Houston. And the Seahawks go on top 9-7. That is the man John Schneider drafted in the first round a couple of years back.
And I could see after the game, you know, we had our discussion about this. The D. Eskridge MVC trophy winning play was this one right here that we discussed on 3 In, 3 Out. And I can see why it was highlighted. This was difficult for me to see. But this was something that was highlighted on the broadcast, that just the way this play was set up to get Penny into the open space. Eskridge gets the key block. Then all Penny has to do there is beat the safety, puts on the stiff arm and turns on the jets, and he's into the end zone. This game from Rashad Penny, I just have to say that it made it fun to be just cheering on Penny. They were chanting Penny's name at this game.
it must have felt good for him, you know, as a man, because he on, you know, at the podium, he talked about getting depressed and getting downtrodden about the beatdowns on social media for a couple of years. Yeah. And it seems like he's kind of figured that out to drown that out, which is great.
If it happens on Twitter, it doesn't matter. It's a good mantra for players to live by. It's a good life lesson to hold on to.
It's a guiding light for sure. Right. So, I mean, now of course I have always supported and loved Rashad Penny. So for me, this was like no surprise. This was like, of course, he just has to stay healthy. He's got all the talent in the world, unlike some others in the flock. I won't mention names, but right. I've always been on the side. With that, we talked about the dynamicism of the Shane Waldron offense and that play and other plays that we talked about too. The cross motion stuff. Let's put it this way. You can't do that cross motion stuff with dudes that don't have the D'Eskridge speed. Like, people say it in hockey all the time and other sports, like, can't teach speed. You can't teach it. So seeing this kind of full complement of what the offense could do, and I don't care that it's the Texans. They're still, their defense is better than their offense. First of all, it's still a professional football team, and it's still kind of practicing getting the Waldron paces down, whether or not that, you know, culminates in a legitimate playoff run this year, meaning like a run to potentially get into the playoffs, or that gets, you know, ended sooner than later. And it's just about getting ready for next year. I'm still bullish. I'm bullish in what I'm seeing. And I've said it before. I hadn't seen this offense clicking like this since week one. And that was week one, D'Eskridge, tons of motion, cross formation stuff. And we saw it against the Niners a decent amount. We saw more of it versus the Texans with a lot of play action off this stuff. And hey, kudos to Penny, man. I mean, just straight up, gotta honor the guy. And it's not just about the breakaway stuff. He does that, but he seems to be running with a bit more of like a chip and a vengeance that we just haven't seen.
This is a part of his game that we have not seen. Even for a huge Rashad Penny fan like yourself, I don't think we've seen that type of power that he brings, where he was, and you saw it even before this run for the touchdown, when they were running him up the middle and he was on one of his first rushing plays of the game, it was up the middle and he was driving his legs and moving. And he had, you know, it was kind of a throwback to the Marshawn runs, where you had offensive linemen pushing him in the back and trying to get those extra yards. And that is a component of Penny's game that we hadn't yet seen.
Well, you know, hat tip to our senior leader here, Pete Carroll, because according to him, in one of those pressers, it was all Adrian Peterson, essentially, right? It was like, and I just wondered, I listened to that pod you put out on field goals that was featuring Pete talking about, you know, AP really has influenced Penny in these positive ways. And I just wondered, like, does Pete really, really, truly believe that? Or is he just doing like an ego stroke about like, look, I'm the genius, you know, 3D chess player, and it all worked out as I am the puppet master. But I wonder which one maybe you believed in more.
Yeah, I might take door number three on that one, and that just that, okay, it happened that Adrian Peterson came in and this also happened. So it's kind of coincidental. And so why not draw the correlation as causation type argument to it and say, hey, maybe this is just what he figured out, because, you know, he had the opportunity. You know, there was a guy on this team that was pretty physical in Marshawn Lynch. Chris Carson is pretty physical. It's not like he didn't have other players to draw upon that physical nature and say, I can be like that. And maybe it was the fact that Adrian Peterson came to this team and he saw him, you know, in his old age, still out there driving piles, and said, you know what, if an old man can do this, a young man like me can do it too. Or it can just be that he's finally really feeling healthy for maybe the first time in his career.
It's a smorgasbord. A lot of those things are possible. I just thought it was a very clever way for Carroll to put that back into the spotlight. And, you know, he's no dummy, right? So I thought it was a very, very just clever turn to point it back on him, you know?
Yeah. And I think it is a way for him to maybe send a message to Penny and say, this is the type of running back that you have that capability of being. You hear him talk about the size difference and that Penny does have the size to be a physical back. It's just that we haven't seen it. And it does feel like a choice. You know, you say you can't teach speed. Well, maybe you can teach power.
I like it. I love it. In fact, And, you know, I know we're going to talk about the Rams game kind of coming up later, but I mean, this game is, it's going to center a lot of it around our ability to, for Penny and this team to chew clock, move the ball on the ground. Like that's going to be the way we're going to attack them. So very excited, starting to percolate. In fact, as we get closer to the weekend here, man.
Well, I'm really excited to share one of these next highlights with you, Clinton, because one of the things when you have the opportunity to go to a game, you have an opportunity to maybe pick up things that you wouldn't necessarily get if you're not there in person. And so I had the ability while I was there to get some exclusive on-field audio that I was able to work in to this Steve Rabel clip. This is the Seahawks. This is Russell Wilson going deep to Tyler Lockett for a touchdown.
Yes.
Sliding to his right side, stops, looks, throws deep.
Hey, I'm Russell Wilson, and I throw a sexy deep ball.
Got a man out there, Lockett. Wide open. Touchdown, Seahawks. How in the world does Tyler Lockett get open as he hits the deck and swims the rest of the way? A 55-yard rainbow by Russell Wilson. And the 12s, and there are a lot of them, are going nuts. And Houston, 16-10, the Hawks lead.
So see, this is the reason. This is the reason you had to come on, Clinton. You Mama Cleo'd this into existence, and you got to see it happen, and the Seahawks take that 16-10 lead.
Now, I have a question here, Brandon. What kind of a spyware microphone did you get? Because you were at the seventh row, which is great, right?
Oh, yeah.
Seventh row. And then was it like an ear peer? You know, like what you have in there? What was extending out to pick that up? Because, I mean, first of all, what a baller move, right, by Russ. He throws the ball downfield and then clearly understands that people are listening and drops the sexy deep ball. And that's amazing. The guy called the shot. I love it.
He called his shot. One, credit to me for being able to mic Steve Rabel, for being able to mic the band that was playing behind him as he's calling his shot. For all of that to come together and for you to have predicted it, masterpiece.
Yeah, it's a moment in time. I agree.
It just goes to this idea that, I mean, this, it did feel like Russ is back. And when you look at his stat line, it's not the 300 plus yards. This is the type of stat line that I feel like when the things are clicking for the Seahawks offense, just 17 for 28, 260 yards, two touchdowns. Now, it should have been, it probably could have been more than two touchdowns, because there was that 23-yard touchdown pass that got taken off the board, and they end up having to kick a 38-yard Jason Myers field goal, which, thank goodness he made that one, missing two extra points. But that's enough of Jason Myers. Let's go back to Russell Wilson. He could have had three touchdown passes if that penalty doesn't take that touchdown off the board.
I've said this, whether potentially my voice is new to some listeners here, and that's awesome. And things I've shared in the past are like the analogy I've always drawn. When the Supersonics were like, you know, going to the championship versus the Bulls, and it was, you know, the Kemp and Payton show with all the role players, the Detlefs and then the McKees and the Perkins and the whole thing already. When you opened up the stat line, if Sean Kemp was like 18 points, 11 rebounds, the Sonics won that game every single freaking time. They would routinely lose games if Kemp had to go, you know, be a 28-point scorer, a 30-point scorer. They barely ever won those games. So there is this Russ pocket. It's like the best success probability. There is a formula for that. And people might say that's Pete Ball and this, that, and the other thing. Okay. But I think it's played out over enough years that it's not Russell throwing the ball 42 times a game. It's him throwing the ball 27 to 32 times and being like hyper, hyper efficient. We saw that in spades on Sunday.
Yeah, I think that goes to having that complimentary run game, which was why it was so important for Penny to be out there and looking good, because you saw some of the other carries from Collins, you saw him from Dallas. It just, those guys did not have the kind of success that Penny did against this Texans defense. And so, yes, they didn't have the number of snaps that Penny did, but, you know, I was a little bit upset even because you look at the first two runs that Penny had, and it was picking up 9 yards and picking up, gosh, yes. I think both of those two runs were about 9-yard runs. And then he comes trotting off the field, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, yeah, he has two successful runs, and then you bring in Alex Collins. Like, he cannot be worn out after two runs. Now, maybe he can be because he just hasn't been on the field all that much. But I thought it was odd that he was coming off the field so early.
Yeah, he was as gassed as Carson was week one a couple of years ago, right? It's like, dude, what's going on here? Yeah,
nine yards, then 13 yards, and then you bring in Collins, and he gets tackled for a one-yard loss.
And, you know, the thing with, and I think it's also just a consequence of Penny is fresh. Like, this is a long season. Collins is dealing with a core injury. You could see it a couple of weeks ago, you know, when he first got back on the scene for us and was taken over for Carson, it was like, oh my gosh, the Irish dancing, look at his step. Look how good he looks, you know, moving in and out of some traffic. And then he gets dinged and he's nowhere near the same. So it's all about health, and it's just brutal. Like, the NFL, especially for running backs, it is a brutal, brutal position. So people, of course, rag on different people for their ability or inability to stay healthy. But if you go up and down the line of like the best backs in the game, they all have spells where they're just not on the field. Like, I mean, they take games off. Dalvin Cook is amazing, right? He's a great, great back. Every single game, it seems like he's in the blue tent at some point.
Right.
Christian McCaffrey has spent basically two seasons now sidelined. King Henry, who could never get hurt, gets hurt early. He's out for the year. It's just that position where I hear people talking about all the time that, like, hey, you know, they'll throw analytics and say running backs don't matter. Hogwash, absolute hogwash. But you do need a stable of them, because vast majority will not make it through a 16 game season. It's just the way it is.
And another thing that is just the way it is how well Russell Wilson was on third down in this game. When you talk about Russ being back, it was finding and making these third down plays happen. We played the highlight with Russell Wilson throwing to Tyler Lockett. That was a third down play. And sitting and watching this game with DCH, if people in the Discord, they know DCH, because he is generally pointing out when he tries to Mama Cleo all the negative moments, and we call it the DCH reverse jinx. It was in full effect during this game, because we were trying to predict together all of the negative things that could happen. And generally it was on third down where they would get into these third and long situations. And, you know, we would try and predict the next Russell Wilson sack, and it never happened. And this was kind of the point in the game where things started to pull away. It was a third and nine in the fourth quarter, about 9 minutes left to go. This was the moment where not only did it lead to the Seahawks pulling away, it led to a Tyler Lockett milestone.
Here comes the rush. Russell's got a scamper to his left. Now he looks, now he throws downfield. He's got Lockett again, who makes the catch, tiptoes on the sidelines. Once again, a perfect pass by Russell Wilson to Tyler Lockett down the left sidelines for a first down and then some. Tyler Lockett has become only the second player in franchise history to record three straight 1,000-yard seasons. Of course, the other, my old teammate, Steve Largent. 78-81, 83-86.
Now, not only was it great that Tyler is joining Steve Largent with this milestone, the thing about being in the stadium for these particular moments was, anytime there was any kind of close play with the Texans, you'd never see the replay up on the Jumbotron. Every one of these Tyler Lockett catches, they were featured on the Jumbotron, and it was so great because it was, you know, oh, let's look to see if Tyler got his feet in. And each and every time, yes, he does. And this was another one of those moments, and a moment where he goes over 1,000 yards for the season.
Lockett is, you know, perennially underrated, right? And it was cool to hear Russ talk about this in his presser. And you don't hear the acronym that Russ threw out. And he throws it out kind of casually. But Russ says, you know, in my opinion, Tyler's had a Hall of Fame kind of career. Like, he put that into the universe, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, as Seahawks fans, you're like, hey, this guy's on path to be like just a really, really good Seahawk who probably gets his number, very potentially could get his number retired, especially, of course, if they could find a way to win a chip with him while he's a Seahawk, that would cement it for sure. But no one's ever talking about Tyler on that level. And I'd say the likelihood is it's it's still really small, but I just thought it was really cool to hear Russ kind of reflect on his game, be like, you know what? Like he just doesn't get the kind of love other people get, but he is a Hall of Fame caliber type talent. And that gets lost sometimes, right? He's not the type of dude that you don't have to get him. He's not the Deontay Johnson, you know, type where you got to get him 14 targets a game. It'd be cool if we did that every now and again, but you don't need that to get him to have what, a touchdown, 143 yards. And man, oh man, it's getting me a little sad, Brandon. We got the news today about him testing positive for COVID.
Right.
You've been holding out hope and saying, hey man, hopefully this is a false positive. He still plays. And the NFL is tweaking COVID rules literally on the fly because I think there's so many people that are being afflicted right now. So
it's so many Rams players being afflicted right now.
Yeah, yes, and and Bears and Browns, right? It's just across the league. It's insane.
No, as a Seahawks fan, you have to choose to focus on the fact that it's Rams players being significantly impacted by this, and it's the NFL having to get the Rams there, you know, into the playoffs this year so they can make their run, because who knows how many years Matt Stafford has left, and the Rams got to work in L.A.
Yeah, the stadium, that brand new SoFi stadium ain't going to pay for itself, right? So, you know, and I would also even say, you know what? I'm okay with it. If they alter the rules midstream here because of like, well,
because Tyler Lockett, man of the year, came down with it and you have to adjust the rules to get him back on the field, then fine.
If that's what it takes, if that's what it takes to get Tyler back on the field Sunday, listen, the Rams are pretty good. We need Tyler Lockett. It's a big deficit if we don't have him. So, and these highlights from Rabel, man, they got me like misty-eyed. And this thing was like 5 days ago.
Well, we have been playing a lot of offensive calls here, Clinton. Mm-hmm. And there were some defensive highlights. But the one guy that I would like to focus on defensively is one of our, I want to say rookie, but he's not really a rookie, but he's kind of a rookie.
Second down and 14, play fake. Mills wrapped up and dropped. Taylor into the backfield, and this time he gets him. This time it's going to count. Darryl Taylor with the sack, and that is his sixth sack on the year.
Yes, and you hear Rabel reference it there, that this one counts, and it was because a stupid defensive holding penalty erased one of Darryl Taylor's... Well, it was defensive holding, right? That erased his first one?
Yeah, it was on Sidney Jones. Yeah, it was on Jones.
And it wasn't really a...
It was super ticky-tacky. Yeah. It was... You know, I like to let the boys play. I'm a big, like, let them friggin' play the game of football and not strip away.
And in this game, it was very inconsistent as to where they allowed them to play and where they would call penalties.
Yeah. So it is frustrating because we're still not getting home that much yet. And this is one of the things before the season started. If you asked fairly knowledgeable Seahawks fans, hey, what's been the biggest disappointment to the, you know, in the year so far, I think a lot of folks, you give multiple choices, a lot of folks would circle like just defensive line, just like sack pressure. It's just, you know, we felt like we loaded up. We thought, even if it was like B players and B minus players and some B plus players, they've all kind of like reduced to C level. And it's like, so to see Taylor still getting his, and I'm with you, feeling like he's a rookie or, you know, a redshirt freshman, if you will. It's
Pete
awesome
keeps calling
to see
him a rookie, and I feel like I guess I'll defer to the coach on that one.
Yeah, I defer to the coach, but he sure does feel like the Frank Clark style projection. And Clark may be a little bit bigger. I can't really tell right now, but he's trending that way. Where I won't be shocked at all if next year he's just, you know, accelerating into that double digits easily. And heck, he might even get there at the end of this year.
In terms of size, he's probably more in the Cliff Avril type frame, but it is exciting to see him. He should have had his seventh sack in this game, and already at six at this point in the season. I suppose he's probably on track to hit double digits considering the extra game we have.
Well, he's got to finish strong, but hey, he's capable of doing that. And we play some pretty bad teams, you know, not the Rams, but we got some pretty bad. We got two bad teams coming up. And then the Cardinals, you know, hey, we'll see, you know, giving some love to Adam here. Adam has been predicting for weeks and before the season started that the Cardinals were not that good. And then when they were good record wise, they were a bit of a paper tiger and things would unravel. they got dismantled in that game versus the Rams. Watching that game versus the Rams, if you didn't know anything about those two teams and watched that one game, man, oh man, did you come away and be like, the Rams are a way better team, far superior team. So I just wonder if Adams, you know, talk about Mama Cleo, crystal balls here. I wonder if his prediction that it's going to unravel, and maybe now it is.
It will help his prediction now that DeAndre Hopkins is out for the regular season. Kyler Murray without D-Hop, and I do feel like Murray is largely responsible for getting his receiver injured, the type of passes that he tends to throw him, and the way he was throwing him in this game against the Rams. I kept thinking, man, he is going to get D-Hop killed on these. And sure enough, late in the game, he hobbles off to the sideline and he's without his star receiver when it comes down to it. They get the onside kick at the end of the game. And, you know, gosh, if you have D-Hop on the field, and especially a healthy one, then I could see the outcome of that game turning very differently. But you know, without your big play guy, they're going to struggle over these next few weeks. Well, we'll see with the opponents that they have. I don't know if they have a super difficult schedule. But getting back to Daryl Taylor and this defense, one of the things that's going to help out Taylor with his pass rush ability is having a big guy like Al Woods in the middle just blowing guys up.
He's been our most consistent. He might be our best. Quandre Diggs, I have to really say, has probably been our best player all year long. And I know that people will
bang
the
drum.
I know people are going to bang the drum for Bobby. Bobby has been good. And I've talked about him getting a tackles record doesn't mean he's having a great season. Like we have got to decouple these things in our brain. It's not like home runs. It's it's people are dumping the ball right where we're not protecting it, and then he's getting tackles. You know, so
it's a scheme thing more than a Bobby. Bobby still has to get the tackle.
Bobby is playing good football because he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. His age is showing. Quandre Diggs has been our best player all year long, and you know, getting back to old thigh arms, dude. Al Woods, how many times he almost had that. That safety where he busted through the line when it was the right side end zone.
I don't know how he allowed Burkhead to slip his way out of that. I thought for sure he was going to have that safety.
I mean, he was all over the place, right? So we would have. I think he had four run stops. He had the one that didn't even count when they had the first down, the first and goal, where they ended up getting busted for an illegal formation. But he makes the stop there. Mm-hmm. That would have been a fifth run stop, and he had the sack. Like, I mean. Listen, old thigh arms is one heck of a player. And the way he celebrates and how pumped up he is, like, dude, I you know, who doesn't like the big fat guy in the middle that can ball? Who doesn't like that guy?
He got so excited that he started breathing on the long snapper so hard that he drew a penalty in this game, too, which was frustrating.
Yes. Fraley McGillicuddy over there was breathed on the wrong way and he stumbles backwards. I still went back and watched that. I think what it was, he's just too much over the long. When he's lined up, he's like a quarter, which is hard, right? This is like Al Woods going to the movie theater. He's like, I don't think I can, you know, do you have any larger seats? Like, this man, he's a big man.
See, it wouldn't have been that penalty because that's a formation call. Okay. And I think that the yardage on that, he got a 15-yard penalty. And I think it was from the long snapper kept his head down after he snapped the football. He kept his head down for an unnaturally long amount of time. And so when Woods came through the middle and grazed the side of his helmet, I think that that's what they called as roughing the long snapper.
Wow. I mean, if that's it, that's even more ridiculous than I thought it was originally, right? So wowzers, that's a horrific, horrific, horrific penalty. But you know, such is life. When you win by 20 and you can bellyache about those things, that's okay.
It leads to an okay outcome, yes.
Sure.
But if that would have been the thing to have turned this game, oh man, that would have been just another part of this Seahawks season that's been frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing that I think was frustrating for Texans fans was that Gerald Everett touchdown at the end of the game where he just gets it to the goal line. The ref was standing right there. It may have been short, but the TV copy could not overturn it.
Play fake, looking. Now lays it up over the top. The ball is caught by Everett, but he's dropped at the 1 foot line. No, they're going to say he broke the plane. The official says he broke the plane and Everett kind of leaps into the end zone and gets tapped on the helmet. Boy, this is going to be close.
After review, the ruling on the field stands. Touchdown.
I've got a take here, man. I don't understand. I just don't get. We have all these next gen stats, right? And you see all these okay commercials like, oh, 7.2% chance of making this catch. We have all this jargon happening in real time, yet we can't seem to put sensors inside the ball and make sure that every pylon in the NFL has a camera. Like, why is that not just standardized? At the very least, every pylon that you use has a camera. Cameras cost about, I don't know, 6 cents nowadays to manufacture. Like, the price per camera has precipitously dropped since it was first invented, right? So,
sensor thing with some kind of line, that may be a little bit more difficult technology-wise, but I know pylon cams cannot be that expensive.
Dude, we have multiple rovers on other planets doing things autonomously right now. Yeah. We could put sensors in footballs.
Just dig through NASA's garbage can out back. You could probably find the cameras that you need to install in the pylons. Yeah.
Not hard. You know, just welcome our robotic overlords already and get this thing right. With that, by the way, I thought it was a touchdown because the angle they give you is not straight down the line. So it's like, all right, I think he probably got the nose there at some point. You know, boy, oh boy, would a sensor be able to tell me that? But, you know, who am I, you know?
Apparently not the sensor consultant for the NFL. That's
clearly not. That's clearly I charge way too much.
Well, with this game, they get the 20-point win. And are there any other big themes that you want to discuss here before we move on to the Rams game?
It's train, keep a rolling, right? We had to win the game. We won the game. It segues into the game that, hey, the slow start. Hey, the not putting an inferior team away, those things. I think it was the Seahawks Nest podcast, I believe, that were like, hey, if we go and try to play Pete Ball versus the Rams, like what has happened 7 out of the last 10 times is McVay out-Pete's him he outmaneuvers him where Pete thinks he's going to be able to control the game. But by the time it gets to the fourth quarter, the Rams are pulling away. We're 2 scores down, and now it's, you know, miracle rust time to try and get back in it. So can we avoid that? That's the big thing on my brain for this game.
And that's what has me the most concerned for this game against the Rams, is that as much as it seems like they have our number, I have not seen Pete really change his approach to how they attack this Rams offense, to how they deal with the Rams defense. I feel like it's the same. Pete has his formula. He wants to get to it. And McVay also knows that Pete is very dedicated to this formula and is able to outcoach him in that regard. And I, you know, it's this weird, how does McVay not see that when he's facing the 49ers? How does Pete not see that when he's facing the Rams? I don't know if these coaches just feel like I have my way that I'm going to do things, and so it's going to work. And how do you not do anything different?
It is very frustrating. And when we look at the history of the last, let's say, 10 games, very often we're being beaten by Jared Goff. Like, that's,
yeah.
And he was jettisoned to Jeff the Detroit Fisher. Lions. Yeah, right.
So this goes back, but this is not a McVay Carroll thing. This is just a Rams thing.
So it's just it's beyond a thorn in our side because they're at least one of our biggest rivals, if not the biggest. And, you know, we got to play them twice a year. We really haven't figured this out too much. I do also think that McVay is way more willing to take what's given than Pete and sometimes Russ will adjust to. If we give them, if we play base 4-3 defense and give them all sorts of softness over the middle, and Bobby Wagner could go get 19 tackles and people could seal clap that. I love Bobby Wagner's a first ballot gold jacket Hall of Famer. Him racking up 19 tackles while Robert Woods goes off in the first game for a bajillion yards, not a winning combination. Let's do something different.
Well, even if they can do something different on defense, let's say we had our way and we could coach the defense and we could say, okay, just worry about though taking away some of those shorter passes. Well, the problem is with the lack of the pass rush against the Rams, with the speed that they have now, with Odell Beckham Jr. being a receiver that can burn them down the field. Van Jefferson's a guy that can burn down the field. They have a quarterback that can throw deep. So let's say you do take everything short away. Then are we going to be getting beat by Stafford bombs all day?
I mean, that is the risk you take. And it's also the risk that clearly Carroll is not willing to take. That's his no-go zone, right? That's his meatloaf. You know, I'll do anything for love, but he won't friggin' do that, right? So, you know, we have good safety combos. I know Neil and Jamal, there's going to be a delta. We talked about this. This will be interesting. Versus Houston, you really couldn't tell. Right? Was that Neil? Was that Jamal? Doesn't matter. It didn't matter there. This game, that delta might be way, way more expanded, which will be interesting to watch. Or Neil steps up and you know, takes that next leap. But we have one of the better free roamers back there with Quandre Diggs. So test his mettle. See if he could disrupt some passes to Jefferson 30-plus, 40-plus yards downfield. I'd like to see the man coverage and much more tightness in the middle of the field. And if they are to burn us deep, you know what? You tip your cap and you get the ball back to Russell real quick versus those 8-minute drives that teams could sustain against us, where we completely debilitate our defense and take the ball out of Russ's hands for 8 minutes at a clip. So, you know, I'd hate to say if we're going to win this game, it's shootout, it's 38-37, 38-35. I am very unsure we could win the game in a traditional Pete Ball sense. I don't know we can.
Well, one thing that Pete likes to do is focus on stopping the run. And I wonder if having the defense, if showing the types of looks that would be more advantageous for the Rams to maybe try and run the ball a little bit more. Because Pete wants to stop the run. So McVay says, okay, well, we're just going to throw these short passes all day because that's what you're going to give us. What if what they give them is kind of a better look at the run game? And I'm trying to find answers because I want them to do something different.
Yeah, because you want them to win, right? So that's good. You're a Seahawks fan and you don't want to get off this crazy train just yet. I understand. I'd be for it, but I'm skeptical that that's what we'll see. That's just because Pete's going to want to play the game the way Pete wants. And I'm not, and I happen to think Pete Carroll's a very good NFL coach, and I don't think the sea change is needed and all those things. I'm still not there yet. With that, this is the type of thing where I'd love to have somebody in his ear, a defensive coordinator that's like, hey, we've got to attack this differently. We have got to try something. And that might mean more blitzing from the edges, you know, more different stunts. Bringing Neil into the box more often, letting him do 2020 Jamal Adams things to try and get Stafford out of that seven step and go type stuff. And Stafford's not very mobile. Stafford is not. He's just not. He can get rattled. Like, Stafford's a much better QB than Jared Goff. He is not an elite QB. He is a perpetual good quarterback. And it's like a Coldplay song, right? If you play a Coldplay song a little bit slower, it's a dreadful train wreck. If you speed a Coldplay song up, if you take clocks and you bump up the BPMs, it's like it's going to sound so weird and bad. They understand their pocket and they sit in that thing and they put out hits. That's Stafford. You get him to speed up or slow down and it becomes a train wreck of a Coldplay song and nobody wants to hear that crap.
I just think, Clinton, that the guy that I would rather get beat by Sony Michel in this game than by Cooper Kupp. And Kupp has 151 targets. That's 20 more than the next person on this list. 151 targets. So, gosh, I wonder where Stafford is going to be looking all day. It's probably going to be at Kupp. And I just have this feeling that on Monday next week, we're going to be looking at it and the stat line is going to say, Cooper Kupp, 15 catches, 170 yards, 2 touchdowns. And we're going to wonder why they couldn't find a way who could have fathomed that Cooper Kupp would be looked at so frequently by their quarterback in this game?
I'm in for making, like, make, if we can make the focus, like, stopping Sony Michel, then I think we've won some sort of battle. If that's the case, it's like, okay, you know, cause then it's like, hey, Al Woods, Puna, let's go. Like, we're, that's playing to our strengths. I don't expect McVay to do that because he's no dummy. I would, if you got the stats up, I don't know if you do, has any, what is Cooper's, I'm going to say his first name and that's it. Huh, look at that. What is Cooper's worst game this year? That he, I don't think he had any injury games. Like, so is there a stat line that jumps out that's like, ooh, that's wildly off than his usual game?
You know, the unfortunate thing about this is now I have to type his first and last name into Pro Football Reference. I don't think it'll take one of the two. You know what? It might work if I just put in Kupp.
Yeah, I mean, like.
Okay, his lowest, he has one game this season where he had fewer than 10 targets.
Okay.
And that was against Houston, where the Rams still won 38-22. Well, because they're playing Houston.
Yeah, they probably ran the crap out of the ball that day.
Yeah, the one team that did limit him. Now, he did have 13 targets in their first meeting against Arizona, but he only had 5 catches and he had 64 yards and 0 touchdowns. So he was limited. He was under 70 yards one time this entire season. And that was the loss to the Cardinals.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just trying to be fair and logical with, like, all signs point to the way we play our base defense, the way we allow cushions and room. I can't see it. I don't see it. Like, I want to see it. But I won't be shocked if this is a 12 catch performance and we just have to, like, deal with it and outscore them. I know you score more points, you win the game, but literally get into a place where we have to score 30 plus to beat them. Cause I don't know. I don't see Kupp getting shut down unless we try something radically different. And I just don't think we will.
Yeah. The team to shut him down the next best was the Seahawks in week 5, where he had 7 catches for 92 yards and 0 touchdowns. The only 0 touchdown game that the Rams have won with Kupp is against the Seahawks. Every other time that he's had 0 touchdowns, the Rams have lost.
Okay, so our best bet, it sounds like, is to keep him out of the darn end zone, right? So, and then we still got to roll rolling the dice here, because obviously
keep Kupp out of the end zone and score more points than the Rams offense, then I think we'll be in good shape.
Yeah, I don't know why I am not a consultant on things about robotics and you know, sensors, and why you are not a head coach in the NFL. I don't get
it. Score more points than the other team. That's my Brandon's key to the game. Score points.
It's ain't hard, people. That's it.
I know I want to get excited though for this game.
Yeah, I want you excited. Yes.
I will be significantly more excited if/when the Seahawks get the win over the Rams.
This is going to be something. 2 weeks ago on 3-3 out, I said, I don't think Seattle is going to beat the 49ers. And then to my credit, I was, you know, texting, DMing you and saying, you know, I've changed my mind. I was like, I've come around to the idea that I think we're going to win this game. I'm sitting in a kind of a neutral spot right now where it's like, I'm hopeful it's a super tight game. It's like, I'm basically begging for the Pete Carroll game. I mean, I'm a glutton for punishment. Like, I'm begging for the 24-22 fourth quarter score, and let's see where the chips fall. Although I know it may result in me breaking my heart again. But I kind of feel like that's a game we might win. It's kind of like the Doctor Strange thing, right? Tony's looking over to him and he's like, hey, he puts up the shaky one. He's like, this is the
this
one.
Is the one.
Are there other ways? Do we see us blowing this Rams team out if we win? Isn't it a nail biter, most likely?
I mean, unless it's something crazy where we get some special teams turnovers and they're really behind the gun early, and
which they are bad at, right? Like, aren't they like a bad coverage team in general?
I want to say yes, but that's just because I really want to.
I want to say yes too. And listen, the DJ Reed potentially returning something. I've been on this wagon for a while, man. You know, DJ
Reed and Eskridge, right?
Yes. Just give the more dynamic dudes the chance to return punts and return kickoffs.
Hey, let's give some credit though. I think the punt return game has been better. And against Houston, I think we actually saw some good things.
And, you know, and DJ Dallas, he's not like a bad returner in the sense that we talked about this. He goes north and south. Like, he's not pitter pattering.
Oh, yeah.
He gets the ball. He goes as far as he can, as straight as he can. And
no, and I was actually talking more about Swain than I know.
Yeah. On the punt stuff for sure. And I was just pivoting to DJ to say, like, he's not bad at it. He's just not quick enough to take it to the house. He doesn't have that ability. That's not his jam. So I was watching highlights of Tyler Lockett. Somebody posted it the other day. It was a punt return versus the Rams, and it might be Lockett's like rookie campaign. Like, if you go watch that stuff, it's like, oh my gosh, like you almost forget how freaking quick he was year one, year two, before he broke his leg in like 17 places. But we have dudes on the current roster who are that quick. So I don't know, use them. That's what I'd want to see.
And I had my heart broken in 17 different places when the Bengals failed to beat the 49ers in overtime this last weekend.
Disgusting. Just disgusting, right? I mean, they get you all hopeful and you're suddenly
on the comeback,
the Burrow Chase bandwagon. And, you know, you're looking up rookie cards like, oh my gosh, Jamar Chase, let me go get a limited rookie card because why not? This guy's killing it. And he's pretty darn good. And then the Bengals are going to bungle, right? They had that game in the first half where they had good momentum. They had the muff punt. The Niners recover real quickly. It was just, and they still make that comeback and they still find a way to make Jimmy G a hero and IU kept with the beautiful touchdown.
And they're driving late in overtime and you think, okay, they're just going to put the Niners away. And then they end up settling for a field goal and then the defender of the Bengals has he gets the gift of the Jimmy G interception and can't hold on to it.
Yes, that's right. I forgot about that play too. I was out of the couch like, yes, you know, so pumped up about that. So, you know, that brings us to the rest of this pack, right? We understand the chances of making the playoffs we got to win out. That's hard. And then we got to climb a bunch of teams. But there are permutations. It's not the Doctor Strange, you know, one way. There's some things that we're probably looking to root for. Do we want to quickly go over like where our Seahawks rooting interests should be in this week?
Oh gosh, we're sitting at a 3% chance. Which weren't we sitting at 3% last week? I don't feel like our chances got any better.
And we went to 5% after we won, but then it went back to 4% after after the Bengals
game. Everybody won except for, I think, one team.
Washington. Washington lost, which was a big one. They're sitting in a spot and we don't have some stupid tiebreaker against them because we didn't decide to lose to a bad team. Yeah. So we're back to 3%. That's okay. But there are some, you know, there's some games this week where it's like some clear rooting interests.
I don't know if I really want to get into that until after this Rams game. I have a hard time unless once they get the win over the Rams.
All right. Okay. I'm okay with that. I'm with you. You don't need to be checking the boxes ahead of the business that is at hand on Sunday. I'm with you.
But yeah, there are five teams at 6-7 right now. And so you are just one game out, but it's the Saints, the Falcons, the Eagles, the Vikings, Washington. Washington, you've lost to. Vikings, you've lost to. Saints, you've lost to. So essentially, those are the three teams that you really need to be rooting against. And then Falcons, Eagles, maybe you can get into a tie to where that ends up being advantageous for you to where you're looking for other tiebreakers. I don't know.
I completely forgot that we played and lost to Washington. That was gone from my memory.
I thought you were making a joke. I thought you were making a funny joke about losing to a bad team.
Nope. I completely forgot that Heinicke and that team beat us and we did so little. That game was like gone from my memory. That's how just bad that game was. Wow. Yeah. So, you know, we've got a hill to climb. So I'm with you. All right, fine. Let's just focus on getting the friggin' dub and, you know, rubbing in McVay's smug face and, you know, knocking them down a tier or two. That'd be nice.
Well, I'm going to skip over our welcoming our new members of the flock. I'm going to wait for Adam to do that. But I do want to recognize our executive producers, DCH, Dustin Mock, Brian Shaw, and Kevin Watterson. Clinton, the cool thing about being down in Houston, I found myself in the middle of an executive producer sandwich. I had DCH on one side. I had Brian Shaw on the other. I was talking to D. Eskridge's folks in line for the event of the Seahawkers Saturday event before the game. And yeah, it was a good place to be in.
That's a beautiful zone for you there. Now, were there any demands with their, you know, their executive production privileges, any recommendations, things that they wanted to see for the show?
No. In fact, I feel like we just have some of the coolest executive producers, that they are not very in demand of our time. Now, we did have a new and I'll give him executive producer credit for this show. I'll wait and read his note with Adam. But Dr. G came in and he gave the donation for the entire year. So that gets him to the executive producer level through this month. And Dr. G, he was an entertaining guy to watch the game with as we watched and rooted on the Bengals, our Bengals against the 49ers for the short time period that I was a Bengals fan.
Very nice. Dr. G, I'm getting an image of like Dr. Teeth from the Muppets, you know, like you got the Electric Mayhem. He's got the top hat, the whole thing already. So in my brain, Dr. G is an amazing Muppet who happens to love the show and give you money for it. So Dr. G's okay in my book.
Dr. G is amazing. And just his background as well is a very cool guy to hang out with. I'm going to mention some of the other flockers that I got to hang out with here in a little bit too, but going to the mailbag. Got a message here from Blake Nelson. Says, sounds like the Seahawks Texans was a great game experience. Thanks for repping the Hawks fans, Seahawkers. I write this while watching the Cardinals Rams on TV. This Arizona crowd is pathetic. Half of them think that they're at a tennis match. A Cardinals touchdown in Arizona gets about as much noise as a 5-yard DK Metcalf reception in Seattle. A lot of these Cardinals fans are clearly extras brought in to fill seats. To pay 49ers fans a rare compliment, opposed to Cardinals or Rams fans, at least they exist, even if they're annoying trout sniffers. Go Hawks.
I like the trout sniffer part. Very nice.
And the thing is, too, this was probably before the onside kick recovery. I want to say that Arizona Stadium was maybe a third full of fans once they recover that onside kick. Fans had checked out. They had given up on the team. And man, I almost wanted the Arizona Cardinals to pull it out just so fans would have been kicking themselves for leaving that game early.
Oh, yeah. Just even for what was better for the Seahawks, I think just mathematically, it would have been a better outcome. But I've grown to really dislike the Cardinals a lot, too. And a lot of it for me comes down to the Kyler Murray hype. Good quarterback. Good. And a lot of the, you know, oh, he should be the MVP consideration. Like, did you watch that game? Did you watch that? And some of the decisions, some of the interceptions, like, you know, gets maybe sometime later in his career, but not yet. Sit down, young man. It ain't your turn yet.
It is annoying when you have guys like Colin Cowherd out on Twitter saying, wow, he does things that I've never seen before from a quarterback. Know. What?
Exactly. He does certain things. I will say this. He does certain things that I only see from baseball hybrid quarterbacks. Like there are certain arm motions that Russ, Patrick Mahomes, Murray, and others who have played baseball at a really high level, who can throw a ball at a certain arm angle that others just never grow up doing it. And Murray did have one of those tosses in this game, but for the most part, it's so tired. It's like, even when you see Mahomes, nobody could do this besides Mahomes. It's like, dude. And then if you say that about Russ, it's like, hey, did you ever watch Fran Tarkenton highlights? Did you ever go back and watch that dude? Like, he did that way back then.
Well, Michael Vick, if you're comparing especially the running game of Kyler, the way Kyler runs with the football and the elusiveness, Michael Vick did it and he did it better.
Yep. Agree.
The Bard writes in, says, well, fellas, we won and covered the spread, which I didn't think we would in the third quarter, although I never thought we'd lose. I hope you all had a great meetup, and sorry that we couldn't get there, but that's the way it was at the moment. I think a few of our lesser-rated players took a step forward, too, and I'm now confused by the likes of Rashad Penny, who I had all but written off, and I wouldn't be the only one, I suspect. What's left now? Well, I totally agree with Adam, and let's have a winning season of 9-8. out of the two games we should manage wins against the Lions and Bears, which leaves the Rams and Cards. The Cards is the last game, so I give us a squeak, as they have clinched by then, and be resting people. They can do what the hell they want, as they won't be more than one and done, in my opinion. Can we win this weekend, though, against the Rams? They had a good result and will be going for it, but they are not unbeatable. Even so, I think they will win, but I've been a good boy and picked the Hawks, as I don't want to make Brandon cross. So let's keep on keeping on and go Hawks. If I'm wrong, then it's just another
catfish
wrong pick, which I've been doing all year. No knife coming here to match my other on. Happy Xmas to all from the Bard.
Wonderful. The vernacular, the delivery, A plus. This is the Christmas story. A plus all the way down the board. Nicely done by the two Bs, the Bard and Brandon.
Well, I think that does bring us a good little transition into our Pick'em League standings. Because as the Bard mentioned, as John mentioned, yes, even though maybe you think that you're with the 4% of the people on the CBS Sports Pick'em League that think that the Seahawks are going to win. Maybe you're part of the 96% that think the Rams are going to win. But because this is the way the league rules are, you're not picking the Rams in this game. No, you must pick the Seahawks. You will be disqualified. I'm not screwing around.
You've laid it out there for several weeks now, right? So
I feel like I've made my point clear. And
yeah, rules are rules. You break this one, you're out.
And for the last 2 weeks, I haven't had to check to make sure that I have to disqualify anybody because the Seahawks have won. And so if they happen to pick against the Seahawks, well, then you know what? You did that to yourself and you took the L, and I'm not changing your L to a W because that's not, I will change your W to an L. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it's a one-way street.
It's only one way. Unlimited Hakra sits along the top with 133 points. Israeli Hawks right behind, tied with Tuga Hawk at 132 points. And then rounding out the top five, we've got Chelsea Hawks, Darth Jamal, I Need Flowers to Wags My Dixon, which I got to hang out with Brian at the game. That is his team name. And yes. Oh, and look at that. I Need Flowers to Wags My Dixon. 13 points correct. Brian. Oof. Brian DeLude with the Hawkra of going to the game and getting the week 14 victory.
Wow, 13's a lot. That's a lot to get right. I mean, this year, things are wacky. You know, even wackier in the NFL than ever. So Brian DeLude, congrats.
Congrats. IR Procise also got 13, but it was Brian with the tiebreaker.
Oh, the names. The names alone, that's it. That's it for me. The names are perfect.
Well, the one last thing I will mention before we get on out of here with my Better at Life this week, but go to tinypiecesofseahawksstuff.com. I am going to get that posted. So you can go to tinypiecesofseahawksstuff.com, comment Go Hawks, and we've got three Seahawks legends, Russell Wilson, Rashad Penny, and Doug Baldwin. And yes, see, I can use that legend term not sarcastically after the performance from Penny this last week.
Yeah, those cards are pretty awesome, man. So it's something you and I have shared. We you know, doing some collecting of late and checking out all different cards. And for the folks out there, maybe I'll put it in the Seahawkers Pod Ring of Honor. I bought a very, very sweet, highly graded Marshawn Lynch rookie card.
Yes.
Where he's in his Cal uniform, autographed by Marshawn. What happens to me, Brandon, is I'll get like into my third beer of the evening, and then I go on eBay, and then I win auctions, and then and the winning of auctions ends up being these sweet, sweet pieces of stuff. So I got, I'll send a photo out there, but it's, and I didn't get, I purposely was like, I don't want a Marshawn Lynch in a Bills uniform.
No,
I don't
no,
want
of course
that
not.
Rookie. I want the autographed Cal, and it's a sweet card. So I'll send that out. So if people are collectors, I know we got some in the flock. You know, they could comment and maybe share some of the collectibles that they're getting, whether it's from tiny pieces or their own, you know, their own devices.
That's right. Yeah. And I note to self, set auctions to end in prime beer drinking hours. So
listen, Amazon has figured that thing out. They know exactly when the house mom gets to their second and a half glass of Pinot Noir. Trust me, those robots know.
On to Better at Life. Closing out the show, I have to recognize all of the members of the flock who I got to meet up with down in Houston. Got to meet up with Brian Shaw. Brian, executive producer Brian Shaw, picked me up at the airport, gave me a ride in his Tesla with the number 12, the Seahawks colors on his Tesla. It was my first ride in a Tesla for one, and it was a great experience. Got to meet his son, Bryce, who has been, you know, a contributor as well. So Bryce, member of the flock, hung out with Aaron Fisher for a bunch of the game, Brian DeLude, his wife, Maureen, who is awesome, DCH, I got to hang out with. Got to meet Dana O'Gorman from the Real Hawk Nice. Talk podcast, who I've interviewed in the past, and her husband was there as well. Got to see Chris and his crew, Chris Boucher, Clinton, who you know Nice. from the commentary. And yes, his brother was there, who is unfortunately a Patriots fan, and then his buddy, who is a Chargers fan but was wearing a Giants jersey. It was a very eclectic group that Chris hangs out with, but it was fun to watch the game with them. And Dr. G got to meet for the first time, and his buddy William, who we have to convince to open a Seahawks sports bar and not a Packers sports bar. So we've got to find a way to make that happen. If you're listening, William, got to go with the Seahawks. And also Tim Moon and his family just had a great time hanging out with Nice. Everybody. And what a fun time down in Houston. For all of you who came out and showed up, you are better at life than Skip Bayless.
Excellent, excellent flock there. And I'm sorry that I was not able to make it. It was certainly something I was looking forward to. Had some family things that have come up recently that I have to take care of. And that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. So I couldn't make this one. Brandon, I was on the, we should go to Houston, it's 12-12. And then you know, everybody went and I couldn't go. So I might as well be consistent. We were talking about the other day, the NFL schedules, of course, are not out yet. However, Seattle does play at Tampa in Tampa Bay in 2022. For those who have not been to the West, you know, the Gulf side of Florida, it's lovely. It's just fantastic, right? Beautiful stadium at Raymond James. They fire the cannons. Hopefully, if we're there, they don't fire but once, maybe the pregame. So I'm going to put out into the multiverse early.
Yeah, and that would be it's nice to plan that out now, but then it will land inevitably around Christmas or Thanksgiving, yeah. And then it'll foul up our plans. But I do like that idea, because there's only, you know, you only get to see Tom Brady play his eighth to final season one time in his career, so that would be an experience.
It's like going to see the Allman Brothers for the first time, for the last time, for the last time.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.